Jeff Merrick, I am a fan of the NHL All-Star Game with conditions. With conditions.
In what way, Wish?
Well, I've always been a geek for skills competitions. I've always loved the NBA skills competition better than the NBA All-Star Game, the three-point shooting, the slam dunk competition, even though some of these things get a little repetitive. In the NHL, I have always loved the skills competitions. I used to go to the localized skills competitions that the Devils would hold to find out the candidates to participate in, like, fastest skater and hardest shot, back when they used to do that, like, local skills carnival and have people come to the building and see those things. I love them. And so when it comes to the NHL All-Star Game, I know there's a lot of apathy. I know there's a lot of people that say, get rid of it, play it outdoors, change the whole thing, whatever. I find that it's comfort food. I find that it's comfort food. And even though this new format has in some ways alienated fans, I think, at its core, I am an NHL All-Star Game fan. You?
An All-Star Game fan or All-Star Weekend fan?
Because All-Star Weekend fan.
Yeah, I love the individual skills competition, and I've come around. See, it's all a matter of expectation, whether it's life or sports or anything for that matter. It's all what you expect out of something. That will judge, that will be the determinant in how you judge something and how you feel about it. Like, if you go to the All-Star Game or watch the All-Star Game and expect a legitimate hockey contest between two teams, you're not going to get it. So you know the way I look at the game itself, because I would pull my hair, oh, change this thing, you got to scrap it, or you got to get like make it a real game again. It used to be the Stanley Cup champions versus a collection of the other five NHL teams would put together an all-star squad. They'd actually have a game, be a benefit, money would go to something or go to some person. But the way I look at it now, Greg, is I say to myself, all right, Jeff, there's no point in twisting yourself into a knot about this because it's not going to change. So you can just, you can do two things, Jeff. You can do nothing and like it. And so I've just resigned myself to the fact that I'm doing nothing and I'm liking it. But the one thing that I look at the All-Star Game now and I say to myself, self, the All-Star Game, based on my expectation, is this. I expect to see the best pickup game played anywhere on the planet this year. And that's what you get.
Right.
Like, but to that end, a hockey game, but if you expect to see a real hockey game, you're going to be disappointed. But if you just say, I'm going to watch a bunch of really talented guys play pickup, then it's pretty cool.
To that end, the only suggestion I'd make to the All-Star Game as far as how to improve the product, because people are always overthinking it, play it 4-on-4. There's no reason why they shouldn't. There's no reason why you shouldn't have Fire Wagon 4-on-4 hockey for the duration of the All-Star Game if it's just going to be the grandest pickup game. And listen, that's how they're positioning it with this fantasy draft. It's a bunch of guys picking their favorite players and picking their boys and getting together and having a skate. And they're all hungover. That's why the other reason I like the skills competition better is that they're less hungover for the skills competition than they are for the All-Star Game. To me, just play it 4-on-4. Make it the pickup game it's supposed to be.
I like it in theory if it weren't for the presence of one very specific position, which I think is the only position that actually works hard at the All-Star Game, and that is the goaltender.
Yes, indeed.
Man, if I'm a general manager, I do not want my goalie going to the All-Star Game. It's bad enough 5-on-5, and these guys are all getting torched, and you can just hear the groins tearing and the groins ripping as they go east-west trying to stop these guys, because no one's blocking a shot, no one's getting forced out to the perimeter, everyone's shooting from the high goal zones, and you're getting clean, clear shots, so your body's moving all over the place as a netminder. If I'm a GM, I don't want my goaltender anywhere near this thing. It's bad enough 5-on-5, Wish, but man, you make this thing 4-on-4. The sounds you are hearing right now is the sounds of the Boston Bruins Stanley Cup hopes going up in flames as Tim Thomas goes east-west to try to stop a Rick Nash shot, and he left his one groin at the side goalpost. So I think it invites even more danger for the goaltenders.
I'm sure they don't want him playing in the skills competition. I mean, that's a lot of flopping and stretching.
Oh.
And DiPietro got hurt in the skills.
Yeah.
But then again, DiPietro gets hurt going to the market for milk. So, I mean, it really doesn't factor in all that much in whether or not the skills competition
is not
safe.
He gets hurt eating pancakes, Wish. I mean, come on. Got to go insane here. But do you think that perhaps maybe as a sidebar to all of this, that for the skills competition, they shouldn't use NHL goaltenders?
No, they should, because they remember they used that one year, the first year that they used the kid in the trick shot competition, and he decided that he was going to make every save. He thought he was in an actual game. He thought he was playing for a contract.
Well,
they started making saves.
I think in that one you should bring in like a glorified goalie caddy.
Yeah, you need a really shitty goalie.
You know, just just get a scarecrow and dress him up with pads and a couple of mitts and just have him stand there.
No. You need to go to the local beer league and say, which one of your guys is the drunkest? Which one of your guys shows up the most tankest? Then you put pads on him and you put him on one end of the ice. And then on the other end of the ice, you go find Dan Cloutier and put him there. So now you have two goaltenders of equal skill, and that's how you're going to have a really great trick shot competition.
There is a story, and I can't say the name. Oh, man, Greg, I wish I could say the name, but there was an all-star game within the last 30 years where one player just lit up like a Roman candle because the goaltender that was starting for the one side was still hammered from the night before. It's a true story. And everyone listening who is either involved in that game or knows the story is nodding their head right now and saying, yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about. I can't give the year. I can't give too many details away. I can't even give the coach away because I'd give it away. But it became obvious real fast that the goaltender was still hammered and the coach left him in.
Didn't have his stuff, didn't have his A game. What you're saying though is interesting because if you're talking about ways to improve the All-Star game, and one of the reasons we're talking about this, by the way, is that on Thursday, today is a Wednesday episode, I'm sorry, today is what, Tuesday? What day is it? Tuesday. On Thursday, they're going to announce the rest of the All-Stars. So, you know, get ready for that. Get ready for all the real snubs in the process. We're talking about the All-Star game because people always love to talk about how to make it better. And I think you've just suggested something really wonderful. All of these guys go to All-Star weekend and they get tanked for the most part. A lot of guys don't drink, but the ones that do get tanked. There's great parties. I've actually been to one. I've seen players with bottles of Grey Goose turned upside down. It's a wonderful thing. Oh, it's great.
No.
So they get tanked. What you're suggesting is beautiful.
Two hours before the game,
mandatory blood alcohol testing for each player. That way we know which guys are actually playing above expectation in this game. If you got a guy who downed two bottles of Jack the night before because he was surrounded by bubbly Russian blondes, not casting aspersions here, but we know, you know what I'm saying? And then he comes back and scores a hattie in the first period knowing how that brain's working. That's impressive. That's worth a car.
And the way to indicate who the drunkest is you change his number from, you know, whatever number he wears in the NHL to .08.
That's right.
The guy.
There you go. Now we avoid the problem now with this fantasy draft of guys sharing numbers. You don't have to have two players fighting over the same number. Now you give them the blood alcohol content number on the back of their jersey. And who's not buying that jersey? Honestly.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty strong one. Here's a question about all-star teams, right? Do you think that it should be the most popular players, i.e. the stars, that go to the All-Star game every year, or it should be the players that have played the best that season?
I will take the middle ground. I think it needs to be a mix of both, but I don't want anomalies. Okay? If you have a guy that you know has got the goods, and he's having a better than good year, then I have no problem admitting him to the heavens with the gods of hockey that should be playing in an All-Star game. But if you have a guy who's kind of playing above expectation, maybe he's on a different line this year, I think the days of the meritocracy are over. I think the days of the All-Star game being an honor for a player because he's having a good season are over, because it's not about that anymore. It stopped being about that the minute they went to the fantasy league setup and cut in half the number of players that are going to be in this game via fan voting. So all due respect to Jason Pominville, for example, who's got 43 points in 41 games, I don't want to see Jason Pominville in the All-Star game. I want to see Thomas Vanek in the All-Star game.
See, this is why I never take to heart or put any value on when you're running down a player's credentials post-career, normally around Hall of Fame time this comes up, when you say, oh, and he was a five-time All-Star. To me, that means squat. And it means squat now so more than ever, specifically when you've turned it over to internet voting.
Right.
It just doesn't, mean anything. Oh, like at the Hall of Fame. Oh, and he was on the All-Star team 8 times. So what?
We didn't really talk too much about the internet fan voting thing with all the senators getting in. But I'll say this about it. You know, I don't have a problem with the guys that got in necessarily, but I have a problem within the context of the format, because now you've got Alfredson, Spezza, McCulloch, Carlson. Okay. Mm-hmm. Those are four spots guaranteed to Senators players. And there's a finite number of spots on these All-Star teams, and maybe you didn't need four. Maybe you needed two. If it was Alfie and Carlson, I'm fine. And I know Spezza deserves an All-Star berth, whatever. I'm fine with two. Now that it's four, and now that there isn't another conference of fan-voted in All-Stars, I feel like now we're kind of saying to somebody who might that should be there or we want to see there, no room at the inn. Milan McCulloch's an All-Star.
See, I think it should be the greatest players in not the best players in the game, but the greatest personalities in the game. Like the All-Star game should just be essentially you've turned this over to a popularity contest. Anyhow, why not just go the full 9 yards with this? Right? Because because the game itself, it matters not if it's, you know, Rick Nash and Pavel Datsyuk and Nick Lidstrom and Joe Thornton. It's going to be a pickup game. And you know what? Anybody in the NHL, I've talked about this before, Greg, on the podcast, in order to make it to the NHL, just to be a bad player in the NHL, you have to be friggin' awesome. Anyone can play that game, right? The actual game itself is, you know, no hit ball. It's a lot of room to move out there and be creative. If you took the nameplates off the back of the players and swapped in third and fourth line guys, the game would look maybe not identical, but pretty similar, right? Mm-hmm. Because these guys are all highly skilled. It's just that when you introduce, you know, contact and thinking at top speed, that's what really separates the great players from the guys that are just good. So I think from a game point of view, none of it really matters, does it? That's what I think. You just bring this goes back to a piece this morning that Damian Cox penned in his blog asking whether Alexander Ovechkin, because he's 39th overall in scoring this. This is not a great year for Alexander Ovechkin. Should Ovechkin be in the All-Star game? I would submit yes, because this is about, you know, the weekend where the stars hang out and all the fans can see the stars all together and it's great for the sponsors. Thank you very much for keeping the lights on. So I think he should be there. But if you're just going to go based on performance, geez, you can make a strong argument that number 8 on the Capitals doesn't belong in there this year, bud.
No, you can make a case that Jason Chimera belongs there more than Alex Ovechkin, if you wanted to go with that, the merit thing. I agree. And I think that an All-Star game without Ovechkin simply based on performance is an oddity. I don't know if I want to necessarily see that. It's kind of like Ozzie Smith in the baseball All-Star game. No matter what Ozzie Smith would do, the fans would vote him in, he'd get in, and he'd be there even if he was hitting .212 because he's Ozzie Smith. So it's the same thing with regard to Ovechkin. I don't say it's the same thing with regard to Brodeur. I mean, Brodeur's had his day in the All-Star game. I don't consider him a star anymore. I mean, he's a star in name only, so you don't have to put him in that game.
You don't think, though, that considering this is probably the last season for Marty Brodeur, you don't think a victory lap game? No.
Oh, sure. No, I think going back to our previous conversation, absolutely, because he would be a great goalie to put in the trick shot competition because he can't stop anything. So from that regard, it'd be great. I will say this. Last thing about the All-Star game for me, Merrick, one guy that I want to see in this All-Star game, if they can get him in, my one guy, come on, you got to get Hobby Bullen in the All-Star game. If only because we know there's a chance he could recreate that drunk goalie story that you just talked about.
Oh, zing. Oh, by the way, check your messages on our
I saw
chat.
It, sir.
I just and told you who the goalie was.
I had my guesses.
Do you remember that year?
Uh-huh.
Because someone, a super-duper star, ended up scoring like a billion goals, one of them within the first 30 seconds. Kind of makes sense now, doesn't it?
You're hedging closer to the truth, sir. Come on, Mulder. What are you going to do?
The truth's out there.
All right, let's start the show.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
That's a hockey, you know. It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Sabine is not English for punch me or headlock me in a scrum.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
All right, coming up on the show today, we're going to do some midpoint awards. We had those on Puck Daddy earlier today, but you haven't heard Merrick's. Bernie Perdurko is
very controversial as well.
Very. Oh my God, very controversial. Yeah. Bernie Perdurko is going to join us to talk about the unfortunate passing of Ron Curran, former St. Louis Blues architect. So he will join us. Puck headlines, a little bit on Brad Marchand's creative retort after his 5-game suspension.
I wondered why it took so long for that report to come out.
Well, here's the thing, right? Not to get into it now, because we'll talk about it later, but it's pretty much what he said after it became apparent he was going to be suspended or there was going to be a hearing. I mean, he kind of just, he already said self-defense, I got him at the thighs instead of the knees. But then he added in the whole thing about Alain Vigneault that we'll talk about later on.
And Kevin Bieksa.
It's brilliant.
That was great. I mean, that's the one that I was thinking of. Like, why didn't that come out? Because the Boston Bruins, out of all of it, they're holding the right Bauer, right? They're holding the Trump card. Like, at any minute, they can just play Stanley Cup, game, set, match. Over. But yeah, you're right. We'll talk about it later on. We'll play that
for sure, for sure. First off, before we get to the midpoint awards, Tebowing. Tebowing in the National Hockey League. Now, we have seen Colt Knorr Tebow.
Yeah.
We saw him Tebow at a Toronto Maple Leafs fan fest. We saw my good friend Rocco Grimaldi, my spiritual guide, Rocco Grimaldi, yes. Tebow after his first NCAA goal with North Dakota. And then last night, we saw Jack Johnson Tebow after scoring a goal against the Washington Capitals based on the fact that his boys from Michigan were in town. They watched the Denver Broncos game against Pittsburgh, and one of them said, "Hey, you score a goal, you gonna Tebow?" And Jack Johnson said, "I'm a defenseman.
Yeah.
I rarely score goals. I'll take that bet." And then he scores the goal, and then he has to Tebow. And and what'd you think about that? I mean, here's the thing. You thought it was awesome. Here's my thing about celebrations, and we've talked about that before on the show about the Anisimov thing and some of the other stuff. Heat of the moment, like the Aaron Asham go to sleep thing, I'm fine with it. I am fine with, you know, if it's a big goal, you know, if you're showing up the other team on a big goal or a big play. You know, if the Anisimov thing had been a game-winning goal, I might have thought about it differently than I did. I just don't like prefabricated stuff, and I just don't like stuff that doesn't really matter. Now, you're saying to yourself, okay, based on that, you must really hate the Jack Johnson Tebowing. Ah! But like, much like jersey fouls, there's always a provision for these things. And my provision for taunting and celebratory nonsense is this. If it's based on a bet of some kind, you have to allow it. You must allow for bets.
You know, to the point about, what was the original point about? It had to be at the perfect moment. You don't want to show up the other team in a dead moment. You know, after every home team scores a goal, whether it's a goal to take a lead, hey, it's now 3-2, the Hawks pull ahead, or it's goal one in a 7-0 blowout, a big horn goes off, a red light fires up behind the goaltender, and 18,000 people start screaming. I don't know what's more show up the other team than that exact moment when a goal goes off. Because when the goal goes off in a lot of rinks, everything goes dark, and the focus is on the rink, and the focus is on the player, and there's a red light that spins, and the music gets really loud, and usually there's a big, loud novelty horn.
And then what
is that not showing up the team?
The next thing you hear is, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da, hey, you suck!
Yeah.
Right?
So. But then, Anisimov, and to make it, 2-1 or 3-2 or whatever it was in the middle of the second period, you know, he pointed his gun at the Tampa Bay Light. Ooh, wow, you can't do that. That's in poor taste. I don't mind any celebration. I know I love them all. I want to see Milan Hayduk, you know, do the swimmer. I want to see Sean Avery crank out the push-ups, right? I want to see, even if it's at a stupid moment of the game. You know, there was a great
hold on, but how do you feel about Ocho Cinco-y kind of stuff in the NFL? I mean, do you feel
the same way? Yeah,
you're cool with it.
Yeah, I'm cool with it. Yeah,
taking out the Sharpie and signing the football and the whole thing.
Hey, listen, if we're up to me, I wish there was a player in the NHL that when he scored a goal, pulled out a Sharpie, signed his stick, and threw it into the other team's bench. All right? Like, in a lot of ways, sports is best when there's heroes and villains. And the fact that you don't like it and have that guttural reaction to it is great for hockey, bro. You know, there's only so many classy hockey players in the NHL
I would like to see, I would like to see a player who scores a goal and pulls out his penis, only to see the minds of the NHL brain trust explode on how exactly to penalize.
Okay, I got a line. I just
penalize something along those lines.
I may have just found a line then.
That's the line for you. A player pulling out his penis in celebration and I'm gonna shake it at him.
That's right. You know why? Because why does he have a heart attack and die? Everyone, with the exception of my wife, is going to go running for that exit. God bless Johnny Upton. He would never try that on Johnny, as Johnny's getting filled in on the ice.
Oh, God.
You know, one of my favorite celebrations ever was it wasn't very subtle, but if you knew the backstory, it was fantastic. It was when the Buffalo Sabres were trying to trade Maxime Afinagenov. Everybody knew this dude was getting traded. Saturday night in Toronto. He's playing the Maple Leafs, scores a gorgeous goal, takes off his glove, reaches in his hockey pants, and fakes pulling out a cell phone and starts talking on it as he goes back to the bench. That was funny.
That's ridiculous.
That was tight.
Was it an invisible cell phone?
It was an invisible cell phone. Well, unfortunately, it was an invisible cell phone.
There's a difference between prop comedy and improv, to me. I'm more impressed with improv than I am with prop comedy. I'm more impressed with Whose Line Is It Anyway than I am with Carrot Top, is the point I'm trying to make.
I just want someone to score a goal and sign the boards, or try to autograph the goalie's helmet, or sign the net, or do something. Can you imagine the level of
outrage? Yeah, but this is the fight fan in you. This is the fight fan in you. Because you want him to sign the boards, and all of a sudden there's a bench-clearing brawl as they're trying to wrestle Burroughs is biting his finger to get the Sharpie out of his hand.
Can you imagine if someone signed the boards after score?
Oh, it's
like
brutal.
Like, you pulled out a shirt and, like, went right over to the opposition bench and signed the best wishes, Brad Marchand. Yours in sports, Milan Lucic. You know, those would go berserk. Tell me that wouldn't be, the most highly trafficked story in the history of Puck Daddy.
I would like to see a hit from behind, and as the guy is writhing on the ice holding his head, the guy signs the board, head goes here.
Oh, right on the glass. Oh, man. Head goes here. Or just draw a target right on the boards. Or just like in baseball, no pepper.
No pepper.
No pepper.
Midpoint awards, sir, as we change topics here. Real quick.
We
only have an hour. The awards that we did on Puck Daddy this morning, we did a lot of them. We did Surprise Team, Best Redemption Part 2. By the way, we didn't do the Lady Bing because I hate that award, but a conversation with Ryan Lambert from earlier this morning has given me an idea, and I'm going to put this out here, and I'm going to guarantee it to all the listeners. If Matt Cook is within a reasonable distance, and by that I mean penalty minutes, to the leader for the Lady Bing trophy as of March 1st, and the leader will probably be either Marty St. Louis or Louis Erickson. If he is in a reasonable distance in penalty minutes to these guys, mm-hmm. we will start the Cook the Bing movement.
Yes.
We will encourage everybody, all of our media friends, to drop their usual thing of voting for the guy with the lowest penalty minutes and give the Lady Bing trophy to Matt Cook. Now, Cook has to not have a major penalty the rest of the way.
Cook.
I know.
Don't be
but
Cook.
So far, so good. Don't be Matt Cook. If Matt Cook isn't within a reasonable distance in the conversation for the Lady Bing, Puck Daddy, Merrick versus Wyshynski, we will throw the full force of our media empire behind Matt Cook getting the Lady Bing this year.
I'm with you 100%, because at that point he officially becomes the new Stan Mikita. And isn't that the model for Matt Cook? I mean, Stan Mikita came in. Actually, I think Stan Mikita, Greg, owns the record for the most Gordie Howe hat tricks. You know, more than Brian Sutter, more than Brendan Shanahan, more than Jerome McGinley. Gordie himself only had two. More than I think anyone else in the history of the game. I'm pretty sure it's Stan Mikita. I'm going to check with the Hall of Fame Resource Center on that one. But Stan Mikita came in as a Czechoslovakian crusher. And sure, he was a skilled guy. Sure, him and Bobby Hull took great slap shots and scored some nice goals. But Stan Mikita was dirty, man. Mikita was a stick man. He was an elbows man. He was vicious.
Great,
like Stan
donuts.
Stan Mikita donuts. You're right. Stan Mikita was. You know, Stan Mikita's he's one. And we'll talk about this when the playoffs come around. I'll run down the list of players who hate Handshake Alley. But Mikita was always vocal about never wanting to shake. He would never shake hands with anybody else. He said, how can I shake hands with someone who just put his hand in my pocket to take my money? I'm not going to shake that man's hand. Like, Mikita was intense, dude, right? He said the greatest moment that he ever saw was when the Chicago Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup in 1961. Gordie Howe came into the dressing room to pour champagne out for all the guys and toast them. He said, that meant more to me than some phony handshake that I don't want to do at center ice to make the fans feel better. That, to me, was sportsmanship. But I would love it for more than no other reason to turn Matt Cook officially into the new Stan Mikita. Because if you look at the history of hockey, are there two closer players than Matt Cook and Stan Mikita?
Like,
when you look at Matt Cook and you look at that type of player, you say to yourself, this guy has the potential to be either frickin' Steve D'Urbano, or now he has the potential to be Stan Mikita. And for that reason, ladies and gentlemen, if Matt Cook is on his good behavior, and please, I implore you from this little corner, vote him for the Lady Bing trophy.
Must do it.
With all due respect to Marty St. Louis and Pavel Datsyuk and Louis Erickson, yeah, that's all fine and dandy. But wouldn't it be a great thing at the NHL Awards? I want to see Matt Cook go up and accept the Lady Bing. I mean, Alexander Mogilny didn't even fly back from Russia to get the award when he was nominated and won. I don't want that award. Like, I've lobbied for years now, Greg, that we should change what this award means. Like, I don't think fighting should preclude you from winning the Lady Bing trophy. It's for, you know, high skill and sportsmanship. And I'll cite you one specific year. 2008. Something happened on April 5th, 2008 that to me should have right there given this player who at that year had 5 fights and 83 penalty minutes should have given him the Lady Bing. It was when Jerome Iginla, the final game of the season, was a blowout against the Vancouver Canucks. Jerome Iginla, the Vancouver Canucks lose 8-1, 7-1, 8-1, to the Calgary Flames, and Jerome Iginla has the entire team form a line in front of Trevor Linden to shake his hand, because it was Linden's last game. They do a one-person handshake alley. That was all orchestrated by the captain, Jerome Iginla, who that year had 5 fights, 83 penalty minutes. On that game, he scored his 50th goal of the season. But that, to me, says high skill and gentlemanly hockey player. Dude should have won the Lady Bing. We have a stupid definition for it.
We're going to throw our support behind Matt Cook, but there needs to be some collective bargaining here. He needs to agree that if he wins the Lady Bing, he will A, attend the award ceremony, B, he will go up to accept the award to the Stone Cold Steve Austin theme. He will bring two cans of beer. He will clank them together. He will go into the microphone. He will say, if you think Matt Cook deserves to be a Lady Bing trophy winner, give me a hell yeah.
Give me a hell yeah. And only if Jim Ross can do the induction speech.
Speaking of awards that will actually be handed out by the end of the season, my Hart Trophy winner at this point, sir, the midway point, not every team has 41 games, but the Capitals-Kings game was the midway point of all of the games that we played in the year. My Hart Trophy winner is Claude Giroux of the Philadelphia Flyers. He would not win the Art Ross at this point. Henrik Sedin has one more point than him, but Giroux has 48 points in 7 fewer games. And I think he is by far the best offensive player in the game this year, and has revitalized Jagr, has carried the Flyers through goaltending problems and everything else with Pronger. He's the Hart Trophy winner in my eyes.
With all due respect to Claude Giroux, and with all due respect to you, Wish, you're wrong. It's Jonathan Toews at 41 points, a plus 13, a face-off percentage of 61.3%, and dude shoots to score. His shooting percentage is 17.1. And faceoffs, he's number one overall. He has won 518 draws more than anybody else in the NHL, rocking just over 21 minutes of ice per game. And you could also make a strong case for him for the Selke as well. To me, the most complete hockey player.
Oh, I think he's got the Selke wrapped up.
You think so, eh? Yeah. You know who's having a Selke, you know who's having a Selke type season too? He's not going to get it, is Ryan O'Reilly of the Colorado Avalanche. And no one's talking about Ryan O'Reilly.
Well, you got such a boner for Ryan O'Reilly. You really
do.
Ryan.
You know what? Hey, go back to when he was drafted in the OHL. He was number one. Who was number two? Taylor Hall, sucker. Jonathan Toews, 41 points, plus 13, kills at the faceoff. He is as close as we come to. We talk about the perfect defenseman, and we keep coming back to Nicholas Lidstrom, like the player that makes the fewest mistakes. When I think about the player that makes the fewest mistakes up front and excels, I keep coming back to Jonathan Toews, and he's having another excellent year for the Hawks.
At the height of their powers. Best two-way player in the game, Jonathan Toews or Sidney Crosby?
Crosby.
That's okay. Crosby. I agree with that. I think he's just a shade better. And he's that would not have been the case back in 2008, let's say, with Sid. He's made himself a better defensive player.
You know what? And that's a great point. And you isolated the year perfectly, because that summer I was at Team Canada orientation camp in Calgary when all the tryouts were happening. And Mike Babcock was one of the guys who had some really sophisticated drills. And he had Jonathan Toews playing both center and wing. And these drills were tough. Like Nash is getting called back. Mike Richards is getting called back. Sidney Crosby is getting called back. The one player who didn't mess up a single drill the whole 4 days, Jonathan Toews. It was like one of the greatest little 4-day camps I've ever seen out of a single hockey player. Didn't like miss one pass, didn't mess up. These were highly skilled, difficult drills. Dude was perfect. Drop my jaw. Absolutely drop my jaw.
Reddit CBJ writes in that you had mentioned Rick Nash like three times already in reference to the All-Star game. You have now mentioned him a fourth time. Do you have CBJ envy? Nash. He wants to know.
Yeah, maybe I do. I got Blue Jacket that's envy.
Vezina Trophy, I give it to Jonathan Quick of the Los Angeles Kings for one reason. Again, this is the midpoint award. 18, 11, and 6. 1.93 goals against, 6 shutouts, 35 starts. He's right up there with Jimmy Howard and Carey Price as being the league's biggest workhorses. If you can start that many games, have that many wins, and post 6 shutouts and a goals against under 2, and this is because only he gets the award because Jimmy Howard has regressed a little bit in the last couple of weeks statistically.
Mm-hmm.
I give Jonathan Quick the Vezina for his effort in the first half of the season.
You see, your natural comparison was Jimmy Howard and not Henrik Lundqvist, eh?
He's got more starts
goals
than
against. Yeah, he does.
He's got more starts than Lundqvist. Yeah,
.939 save percentage. If you had one game today to play and you could pick any goaltender in the NHL based on how they've played this season, who would it be?
Tim Thomas.
Really, eh?
Totally. I would take Tim Thomas before I take Lundqvist, because Lundqvist's never been. Wait, he's never been out of the second round?
Yeah.
So
yep,
that's my
that's
pick.
Right.
But you sound like you'd give Lundqvist
I'll give it. Lundqvist is the best goaltender I've seen this year. Like as far as money saves go. Right? And listen, that team's blue line has been, and sure Dan Girardi has blocked about a million shots and that helps Henrik Lundqvist and I get that. But he's doing it with a patchwork defense up front. Like there's not a lot of guys that can help out Henrik Lundqvist in a significant way. Like in years past, he's had some guys who could help him out back there. Lately, this year with Mark Stahl out of the lineup, it's been challenging, bro.
I think you're underrating the blue line. I think you're underrating the forward group that they have there, especially like a guy like Ryan Callahan throwing himself in front of the puck.
I think one of the best defensive players they have is Marian Gaborik. We always point to Ryan Callahan as being, I'll tell you one thing. Everyone's impressed with the goals and they should be. Everyone's impressed with the speed and they should be. What I'm impressed with is this guy is on the ice in a one goal game in the last minute. And you know why? It's because of that guy that Marian Gaborik hated in Minnesota, Jacques Lemaire. Lemaire turned this guy into a player that can play at both ends of the ice. And that's why you see him on the ice a lot. That's the one thing that impresses me most about Gaborik. We know he can score. What impresses me is what he does in his own zone.
I'm also impressed with his frugal choice on Christmas trees. I think he does a really good job selecting which one has the best plumage.
Did you pick up on my vibe about the Minnesota Wild logo having the Christmas trees in it?
No, I mean, I knew they were pine trees, but they're Christmas
pine
trees?
I don't know, but Christmas trees. But just
connection to Gaborik, you mean?
Oh, yeah, okay, because Brizgalov, you know, had the duck for Christmas, and there's Marian Gaborik picking up the tree. It's subtle, but I'd like to pretend it's there.
Norris Trophy, Zdeno Chara of the Boston Bruins. I thought Corey Massasek of NHL.com nailed it when he said that Shea Weber had this thing wrapped up in the first half of the first half of the season.
Yep.
And then maybe there was a bit of regression from him and Suter. Chara is a plus 27. He is the face and the leader of what is the best team in goal differential, maybe on the planet. And so I think Chara's got the Norris right now.
I'm with you on that. I think you can speak favorably about Duncan Keith, who's having a nice comeback season for the Hawks, but I'm with you on Char. I'll take the
Where would you put Carlson in your top five for the Norris?
I wouldn't put him in my top five.
He wouldn't be in your top five for the Norris?
Nope. No, man. He's Jekyll and Hyde, bro. I love him with the puck. I adore him with the puck. He terrifies me without it.
Yeah, but whenever you create a top five for the Norris, it's like your top five picks for best actor. It's like four really great thespians, and then that one wild card from like the really, really popular movie that you have to, like, you know, like the Heath Ledger from, you know, Dark Knight kind of choice alongside like Daniel Day-Lewis. Like, you gotta put that guy in there, and I think Carlson's that guy for me. Okay.
I've just seen him make so many mistakes. We all have seen him make so many mistakes in his own zone. He is a night and day hockey player. In a lot of ways, he's almost to me like he's a glorified winger, really, when he's out there. He's so fun to watch with the puck. Like, he is my, as far as defensemen go this year, he is my favorite to watch with the puck. But without the puck,
I can't wait till you leave the your house today, and outside is Phil Housley, Mike Green, and Oleg Tverdovsky with pipes in their hands, ready to beat you up for the glorified winger comment about an offensive defenseman. Terrible.
Well, you know the thing about Erik Karlsson? Yeah. The thing about Erik Karlsson is he can, in any game, he can be a factor in every single goal.
Well, there's few players you can say that about, Merrick.
It's totally true. That's what I'm standing by.
Calder Trophy, the injury being what it is, I think he meets the cutoff point. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has been the most impactful rookie. He's been the best rookie statistically. He wins the Calder based on the first half of the year with the caveat that Adam Henrique is right on his tail for the league lead in points. And Henrique, along with Matt Reed of the Flyers, to me, those three players, RNH, Henrique, Matt Reed, are the three that have had the biggest impact on their teams this year, and Henrique is riding up the standings with a bullet right now.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned right away that it's either Henrique or Matt Reed who are the Cato to RNH's Green Lantern. Because
Green
I would
Hornet.
Submit...
Green Hornet.
Green Hornet, God. Green Hornet, rather. Jeez, sorry.
Green Card Lantern.
I would... where would you put Cody Hodgson in that mix?
He's moving up. I mean, I don't think that
Huh?
Quick, yeah, for sure.
He's moving up. And in the biggest game of the year, who was the best player?
It was Corey Snyder.
Okay, who's the second best player?
Corey Hodgson.
Cody Hodgson. Yeah, you're right. It was Corey Snyder. Who was the second best player? Who's the
Corey,
yeah, the,
Cody Hodgson.
Who was the best player that's allowed to skate past center ice?
Cody Hodgson.
The biggest game of the year. He pulled his biggest, like that to me, and I understand the points is one thing, but you have to look at intangibles too, I think, when you're looking at any trophy for that matter. I look at big games and big game performances, and that's why I put Jonathan Toews right up at the top of the list for the heart. The bigger the game, the better this guy plays, and in the biggest game of the year, for any of the 30 NHL teams, he was the best skater. That to me means something.
But you'd give RNH the call.
Oh, yeah,
right
yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. First half? Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Finally, Jack Adams. This is the most, I think, at the end of the day, controversial award you can give out. Even more so than the Hart. And even more so than the Vezina. Because you literally have an incredible mix of guys that are coaching really, really good teams that have been there for a bit, and new guys that are veteran coaches that have totally turned teams around, and complete effing newbies that are getting their first crack at the NHL and are making a difference on their teams. Now, I think the winds are blowing towards Kevin Dineen from the Florida Panthers to probably be the first half winner of this award, and I disagree with it for one reason. I think that's based on last year's team. I think you look at the Panthers last year and what they've been in years previous, and you say, wow, Kevin Dineen is really making a difference with this team. Ah, except last year's team doesn't exist. This is an entirely new team. This is an effing expansion team, okay? And Dineen happens to have the right mix of players. Dale Tallon, executive of the year. Kevin Dineen, not necessarily coach of the year. In fact, coach of the year, Merrick, Ken Hitchcock of the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. The only fight that I'd give you on that one is considering how the Rangers, what were they, 4-6 out of the gate? And it wasn't until they beat the San Jose Sharks on Halloween and Joe Thornton said that's the softest team we faced. We should have beaten those guys. At which point the Rangers found their spines and attached a rocket to those spines and took off and became one of, if not the best team in the National Hockey League. They had a pretty bad start. Like it was looking all bad news bears for the New York Rangers. I would say that, and maybe this is just because I'm tainted and biased because I love the way he was in HBO's 24/7, but I think John Tortorella's got to get some love here. After the first bad month this team had, he turned these guys around right quick. So
dude,
it was like
love.
I think he will too.
I think
and
so.
And I think he'll get plenty of love, and he may end up winning this thing at the end. But for taking what was a bad team and turning them into a really good team, I'll give it to Ken Hitchcock. But I'll listen to arguments for John Tortorella any day.
Well, you're underestimating one thing about Tortorella, which is, as you mentioned, the 24/7
New York media?
No, the 24/7 effect. Well, maybe. You know, maybe. That's a possibility too. But how many Rangers win major awards? I mean, Lundqvist has never won a Vezina.
Yeah, but how many times have he...
okay, but the caveat there is that Brodeur wins them every year, and that's New York media. Okay, I just answered my own question. But the 24/7 effect to me gave Bylsma the Jack Adams last year. Wouldn't you agree?
Yep, totally. Because everyone said, man, I wish that guy was my coach, because he just got a sense of the style and the vibe. Plus, he pulled off something miraculous. I mean, that team was decimated. Mm-hmm. And he was still able to pull this team to a 100-point season. That was ridiculous what Bylsma did. Plus, he did it with a style and a flair and a coolness. Outside of that one scene in HBO's 24/7 when he's taking one-timers and every shot was a knuckleball and everyone said to themselves, this guy was in the NHL, for crying out loud? Outside of that moment, he said, man, this guy is it. I love Dan Bylsma.
There you go. Well, those are the awards. A lot of really cool feedback. We love the fact that you guys are listening to the show live and interacting and stuff. We'll get to some of the stuff about the awards later on, but we have a guest on the line, Merrick.
Yeah, we do. He is a Hall of Famer. He is a broadcaster with the St. Louis Blues, the color voice of the St. Louis Blues here on a sad day in St. Louis Blues history, also a sad day in Montreal Canadiens history. Ironic enough and perhaps fitting, because this is probably what the gentleman would have liked. Today, the Montreal Canadiens do face off against the St. Louis Blues. Bernie Federko is our guest. Bernie, how are you today, sir?
Gentlemen, I'm great, thanks.
A pleasure to have you on board. Before we talk a little bit about the St. Louis Blues, this year's edition, and Ken Hitchcock, a couple of things about, I guess, your old general manager, Ron Curran, who today passed away. When I say the name Ron Curran, what comes to Bernie Federko's mind right away?
Well, the intensity of Ron Curran, I think, comes to mind. I mean, he was a character. He was his whole life was hockey. I mean, he was intense all the time, and he was so passionate about building a team and so passionate about the game of hockey that I think that high voice of his, and when he got excited, when he got going, there was no stopping him. So it is truly a sad day because he was just a great character and.
I think we're losing Bernie on the phone.
Uh-oh.
Got it.
Hey, there you go. We got you back. So I just had a hard time with your phone there, Bernie.
I don't know if it's in the room I'm in. I'll try to get close to the window. I don't know if that's...
Windows are always good. Although, if you live in Loudoun County, Virginia, you're screwed. There you go. Hey, Bernie, I'm the child in this conversation. I'm 34, so I didn't really get to, and also I lived in New Jersey, so I didn't really get to experience too much of Ron. The one thing that stood out for me this morning was seeing how many people stood up in the media and said, this guy was one of the most personable, gregarious dudes you could possibly imagine. Give me a sense of what kind of a guy conversationally and socially Ron Curran was.
Let's give Bernie a call back. We're gonna give Elena back at the fan. Maybe we'll get Bernie back on the line and get him on a better line, because Bernie will have some great stories about Ron Curran. And what would be interesting too is I'm pretty sure Ron was because it wouldn't have been Larry Plough who came after Ron Curran. I think it was Ron Curran that actually traded Bernie Federko to the Detroit Red Wings.
So that
you're curious about how a general manager handles that situation. Or like, how does he tell the player? What was the nature of the conversation?
Couple things.
And you're right. Like, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, go ahead. And you're right about what.
Well,
I'm
just the one thing about Ron Curran that everyone, and you mentioned this, everyone talks about, is he's got great stories. He's a lovable guy. He's, you know, he's feisty. He's fiery. But the one thing you got is that everybody loved this dude. So whether he was, you know, in your face and yelling and screaming at you, 2 seconds later, he'd be your best buddy. That was just the nature of the fiery Ron Curran.
My connection to him is the Scott Stevens, Brendan Shanahan do-si-do. He was the GM of the Blues during that whole thing with the Devils, which obviously changed the course of both franchises in some way, shape, or form. As we wait for Bernie to hop back on, a couple of bits of listener feedback from earlier segments. Mike Bradley and Simon Walker want to ask us where Paul McLean is on our list for the Jack Adams from Ottawa.
Yeah, he's got to be right up there, too. This team was supposed to be in the fail-for-nail sweepstakes.
Totally.
Right? This team was supposed to be nowhere man for all you Beatles fans in the audience. That's where this team was supposed to be. I think in a lot of ways, he is the perfect coach for this team. Like, when you look at all the kids, and listen, Jason Spezza has done a great job, because for the first time in Jason Spezza's career, he's had to be the mature veteran. He just doesn't have to be like the highly skilled goofy kid who's along for his 100 points a season. Now, like, more is resting on his shoulders as Daniel Alfredson is sort of shading himself out, and Jason Spezza picks up the mantle, essentially being the leader of this team. Two people come to mind for me for the Ottawa Senators. One is Jason Spezza, maybe even a bigger one is Paul McLean. I think definitely Paul McLean gets some Jack Adams
there. And how good does Babcock look? McLellan goes to San Jose. They don't miss a beat, and they get to the conference finals.
Yeah.
McLean goes to Ottawa. That team, you know, goes from being what many consider to be a lottery team to now a playoff team.
Gosh. Hey, what do you think of, I mean, Mike Babcock has never won the Jack Adams, right?
Yeah, but like I said before, he's in that mix of guys that are really, really, really great coaches that will never get the credit they deserve because you can't put your hands on what they do. You don't see a team that's real shitty, and then they come in and they make it real, real good. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to really quantify how good Vigneault is, how good Babcock is, and in some ways maybe how good Torts is, unless they win the conference. So,
Bowman's point was always it's harder to coach a team of superstars, and that's why I think we see with the Detroit Red Wings, and that's why I think the job that Babcock's done is remarkable. I think we have our man back. Bernie, are you there?
I am here, guys.
Hey. There we go. Perfect. And, you know, Greg, you want to take over with your last question?
I wanted to find out what kind of dude Ron was, because everybody, when the news of his passing hit this morning, was everybody in the media was talking about how no one worked the press box better than this guy. What was his personality like?
Well, it was just brimming with enthusiasm. I mean, Ron Caron, when he walked into the room, if you didn't want to talk, you better get out real quickly, because when he talked to him, you weren't going to talk to him for a minute or two. It was going to be half an hour at least. he had a million stories. You know, I think he had a photographic memory, because everything that you've ever done or anybody that he knew exactly where he, you know, especially hockey wise. I mean, he knew exactly when I played my first junior game. He was there at a rink when I did this or that. He could go, and everybody, but it would seem not, it was everybody. He knew something about everybody, and he never forgot it. And it was just absolutely bizarre how much he knew and how many stories he had. And you know, all the travel that he did, he still had stories about everybody. And he would, it seemed that he was at any moment that you really had in your life, he seemed to be always there. So it was incredible. He was so enthusiastic, and he was so passionate, especially about hockey and about the New York Yankees.
Yeah, he was a big baseball guy. I guess the stories we all hear about his knowledge of baseball was encyclopedic, like it was with hockey, Bernie. Hey, if we said to Ron Caron, hey, Ron, what happened on June 15th, 1989? He'd say, oh, that was the day that I traded Bernie and Tony McKechnie to Detroit, Oates and McLean coming back the other way. Do you remember a specific conversation that you had with Ron Caron when you got traded? How did he handle that very sensitive situation?
You know, it was, I mean, I was telling the guys this morning that, I mean, it was actually a very simple conversation, because there really almost was none, because I didn't have an agent. I was at the end of my career, and I thought I had, you know, I was going to sign one more contract, a year and an option, and I was done. Mm-hmm. And I talked to him right at the end of the season, and he said, well, come in on Friday. We'll get it done in an hour, because I know you have a golf thing that you're playing in the afternoon. So I walked in on Friday morning at 9 o'clock, and he just looked at me and said, Bernie, we had meetings this week. We decided we're going to trade you. You know, go home. You know what? Think about where you want to go. We want to make sure that everything's going to work out, and come back on Monday. So it was kind of a shock to have that happen to you. But you know what? By the time I got in there Monday, they already had a deal done, and I'm sure they had it done on Friday when he told me. But you know, basically, it was just a very, you know, professional transaction that happened. I mean, there's not much words were exchanged. He was always very to the point. And he was always very respectful. You know, he thanked me for my time there, and he basically said that it was, you know what, we have an opportunity. He said, Jacques Demers really wants you in Detroit, and we just feel that this is better. You know, we're getting younger. You know, we're building from here, and unfortunately, it's just the nature of the business. So, I mean, he was very respectful, and I've always said that, is that I never, as much as it hurt me, as much as I was disappointed to have to leave St. Louis, he treated me with a great amount of respect, and he did the whole deal with a lot of class, and really, I had never had any resentment. So, of course, I was very disappointed. But, you know, I had no resentment for him at all, because he did it in a very classy way.
Very good, very good. Moving on to the Blues, sir. Your thoughts on Ken Hitchcock winning the Jack Adams this year? I mean, we just discussed our midpoint awards picks. I think that Hitch probably gets the Jack, because it's very easy to point to what this team was before he got there and what this team was after he got there. And your thoughts on him being Coach of the Year?
Well, he certainly has brought in a real calming effect to this hockey club. I mean, Hitch has come in. You know, this is a pretty good. We felt that this was a pretty good team that they had here in St. Louis. I mean, there's you know, an awful lot of skill. We felt that the goaltending was really good. It's a very young defense, and I think that was our big concern, is that how was the defense going to hold up. But, you know, Hitch has come in, and he's just really kind of put an aura on this team where they don't get outworked. You know, they work on little things, like the power play that's starting, you know, to be effective now. And I mean, he's got a sense with, especially with the older guys, you know, giving them time off, talking. His communication skills are very, very good. So he's really taken a pretty good hockey club, and he's made it a real good hockey club. And yeah, I mean, I think that he should be certainly considered, you know, for the Jack Adams, because this is really a hockey team that really believes strongly in itself, and I think it's because of his presence and the successes that he's had behind the bench before.
You know, it was very interesting because almost, really immediately, as soon as Ken Hitchcock showed up, this was a different St. Louis Blues squad. And what was the mood of the team when Hitchcock took over? And one of the first things the St. Louis Blues did was trade Nikita Nikitin to the Columbus Blue Jackets, and in comes Chris Russell, someone who we know that Ken Hitchcock loved when he was with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Was there the feeling that, uh-oh, the new coach is in and he's going to bring in his own guys?
No, I don't think there was any sense of that ever, guys, because, you know, Hitch and Doug Armstrong are very good friends. I mean, they started really together when Hitch was in Kalamazoo. Doug was the assistant general manager in Dallas. So they've been together an awful long time. You know, when Doug was still there in Dallas when Hitch went to coach Dallas, and they've done a lot of work with Hockey Canada together. So, no, you know what? Whatever happens here, I'm sure that Hitch has an opinion to Doug Armstrong, but Army is you know, running the ship here, and I mean, I think that's another reason that obviously Hitch is here is because of Doug Armstrong bringing him in. But no, I think that they're looking for another puck moving defenseman, and they felt that Russell is one of those guys that when he gets a puck, he moves it quickly. And I think that's when you watch the Blues right now, guys, you can see that they don't spend a lot of time in their zone. I mean, it's quick transition. It's because of guys like Russell, Petrangelo, Shattenkirk. I mean, these are the guys that are, you know, Koliakovo. They move the puck very quickly and very fast, and that's kind of one of the reasons that the success has been there, too, for the Blues.
Last one for me, Bernie. Your thoughts on realignment getting spiked by the NHLPA. I think, you know, there was some virtue to the travel schedule, the fact that teams wouldn't, like the Red Wings, wouldn't have to go to the West Coast all that often, the same thing with the Blues. But, you know, to me, I really kind of like the playoff format now. I was a big divisional playoff fan growing up, but now I kind of like the whole 1-8 big conference format. Where do you stand on that whole thing?
Well, to me right now, I think this is a little bit of posturing because of the CBA coming up to renegotiated this summer. So, I mean, I had no problem with the alignment. I didn't really like the fact that, you know, that the East only had 14 teams and the West had, you know, 16, which, you know, makes your chances of making the playoffs a little harder, you know, in the Western two divisions or conferences, whatever we want to call them. But, I mean, I still, you know, especially with where the Blues will end up, I mean, if this does happen, the conference that they would be in would be wonderful to watch, because I think that I really like the idea of having, you know, two rounds of playoffs within the same division. And, you know, certainly with Chicago in the division and you know, Detroit and the Blues, then you bring Dallas back in, and, you know, this becomes a division that we think that would be a lot of fun to watch. And I think it would be really great hockey in the playoffs, and I would rather see it that way and then, you know, get to where the conference finals was whatever two divisions you're picking. But I kind of like the idea of the new realignment, and I'm kind of disappointed that the PA turned it down.
Bernie, last one for me, and we'll let you get on with what should be a very busy day. St. Louis Blues facing off against the Montreal Canadiens, Yaroslav Halak versus Carey Price, and all the pageantry that goes along with that at the Bell Center. But I want to ask a question about early in your career. In 2 years in a row, you were part of a kid line. Well, it's actually called the kid line, but it was with different players each year. Brian Sutter was the constant, and in 77-78, I want to say, it was Rick Bourbonnais, and then Wayne Babich the next year. Which was your favorite kid line to play on?
Well, it was kind of, we had much more success with Wayne Babich. I mean, with Rick Bourbonnais, we didn't really have an awful lot of time together. I mean, Rick was kind of up and down, and when we originally got called up together, you know, we had some success, but we really, in the second year, in 77-78, really, you know, Leo Boivin had come in to coach. You know, Abel Francis was not coaching anymore, so he kind of, you know, changed, mixed and matches, and we really didn't get a chance to play a lot. And it really wasn't until the end of the year when Barkley Plager came in just before the trade deadline. That's kind of when we got our opportunity to really play in the second year. And then, you know, unfortunately for Rick, for whatever reason, you know, when we had the high draft pick, you know, Wayne Babich came in, and then all of a sudden he was thrown on that line with us. So, I mean, you know, we had great success with Babs. He was, you know, it's unfortunate that he hurt his shoulder, because I think he could have done an awful lot of damage scoring goals in the NHL if he wouldn't have hurt his shoulder.
Listen, it's always a pleasure catching up. Wish it was under better circumstances. Thanks so much for sharing the memories of Ron Curran, and good luck the rest of the way this year with the St. Louis Blues. Enjoy tonight's game.
Thanks, fellas. Appreciate it.
There he is. Bernie Federko. He is a member of the Hockey Hall of Fame. He is with the broadcast crew. With the St. Louis Blues, it is Halak versus Price this evening. Was that
indeed
too geeky a question?
No, not at all. And I was actually at the only Hall of Fame induction weekend that I attended was Bernie Federko's. Federko, Gillies, Nielsen, and who was the big dog? Langway was the big dog that weekend. Yeah.
Did you have fun? Was that a good one for you?
I loved it, and I can't wait to go back. And I think the next time I'll go back as a fan will be when Marty gets in. I think I don't know when that'll be. Maybe my daughter will be old enough to come with me. But if you've not done it, and this is cliche at this point, if you've not done it, go to induction weekend just once.
Totally.
It's amazing. It really is amazing. You see so many, you get starstruck. You know, you sit down at this party and you're talking to Ted Lindsay. You know, I had this really long conversation with Peter Stasny in the hallway about his time with the Devils. I mean, it's just a really, really cool time, and it's such a celebration of the game. And listen, you know I'm not like this. I'm not some syrupy dumbass who gets into the whole pond hockey, nostalgia, whatever aspect of hockey. But induction weekend brings out the kid in you. It really does. It really, really does. And it's a wonderful time.
Yeah, and I'm not a big sucker for the speeches necessarily, but a couple of them come to mind right away. And the Brett Hull speech to me was the one that always – I think we talked about this one of our first podcasts. When he started talking about, you know, for all the rec league, beer league, hockey players out there, all the hockey moms and dads, 5 o'clock in the morning – that was like, that was, it was weird because it was like, man, am I getting goosebumps about this? Yeah. Why am I freaking getting goosebumps about this? But that was because I had never heard an NHL hockey player talk to the hack men's league beer guy that is me. But he talked about the spirit of the game and the game being alive everywhere. And I've never heard an NHLer pay any homage to a hack like a guy like me. That was a really special one for me. I don't know why.
The Shanahammer swung twice yesterday.
Boom.
It did not swing a third time. Francois Beauchemin got away with a, quote, blindside hit on Jeff Carter that separated his shoulder, which I'm sure they only looked at because Carter was injured on the play. I saw that thing live. I went back and looked at it. I did not see it as a suspendable offense. I believe that was the right call.
Yeah, I think it was the right call. It looked like it was shoulder to shoulder first, and then from the shoulder it rode up into the head. I was totally cool with a non-suspension there.
But the Ducks did not get off scot-free.
No!
That'd be, it was Jean-François Jacques. Suspended, 3 games, I believe it was, right? 3 games for
an
elbow
to
the
accent. If you can do the French accent. Yeah,
trois. Three games for hitting, RJ Umberger in the head while he was in the act of shooting. This harkened back to the old Max Pacioretty suspension, I thought, on Letang from earlier this year, where Letang was injured on the play. Broke his nose, if memory serves. And you and I had a bit of a disagreement. I believe that the shooter has a right to take a shot without expecting to get hit in the head. You believe that hit is a little bit more palatable than I do.
I just think it's a dangerous move. Not to hit the player, but to take the... Like, taking a slap shot on the rush in the middle of the ice just below the blue line? When have we seen that in hockey ever? You see slap shots in the point when the puck comes back on a power play, even on a 5-on-5, and the defenseman fires it. But on a rush, like, you know how dangerous that is? Like, that is, like, my kid is 20 months old now, and I'm going to teach him never make that move. I'm going to teach him never to show his numbers at the boards, and I'm going to teach him if he plays hockey, never make that move on a rush, underneath the blue line, wind up for a slap shot. The minute you do that, you're putting your head forward as a defense is coming into you at that point. Like, he winds up, he's a left-hand shot, winds up to take a slap shot, so his head is out in front of him, and here comes JF Jacques. Where is he supposed to hit?
Well,
the hit's coming. And I know that, oh, Jeff, you got to change, you got to adapt. I guess so, because now I guess that hit is fine. But even just on the off chance that someone might hit you in that situation, and it has a potential to end poorly, I would not want my kid to put himself in that situation.
Well, by the time
But there'll be no hitting, I know. It'll be like an all-star game. Every game will be like an all-star game. But here's the thing. I'm talking to Craig Simpson last year at Hockey Night, whose kid plays for North Dakota. He said, I always taught my son, and I believe this so much, and if you're a hockey parent, I hope you teach your kids this too. That sounds like grapes. I hope you teach your kids this.
All you kids out there.
No, like he taught Dylan from a very early age, wherever you are on the ice, whether you have the puck or you don't have the puck, expect to be hit and prepare yourself that way. And if you get hit, you're prepared. And if you don't, it's a bonus. but always be prepared at every single situation to be hit. So every single moment you play, think to yourself, am I in a situation where I can be hit right now? And if I am, I better protect myself.
Yeah, but the NHL is still saying prepare to be hit, just that you, because of us, now you can expect not to be hit in the head. Because of us, now you can expect if you're trying to lay a good check on the guy on the forecheck or going after the puck that you're not going to be tilt-a-whirled by some guy taking out your knees. They're saying you can still expect to be hit, but we're going to make sure you're not going to be hit in a way that might concuss you. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I don't want my kid on a rush taking a slap shot underneath the blue line in the middle of the ice.
The third hearing and the second suspension yesterday was, of course, Brad Marchand. Brad Marchand of the Boston Bruins gets 5 games. And here's, I sent a message, to Shanahan last night to say this. I don't believe he should be suspended. I think it's a hockey hit that went awry. In my NHL, just like in my Hall of Fame, certain guys don't get in. Maybe the guy who was on the phone. It was a terrible, terrible host. I understand why he was suspended. I understand why he needs to be. There was an injury on the play. He's a previous offender. That whole thing. I gotta tell you, man, I said this to Shanahan last night. I said, his explanation video on this made me nearly flip. It almost made me turn heel on myself because the way that he laid this thing out made so much sense. And at their best, these videos do that. They make even the most ardent guy question his belief system because it was a predatory hit. It was at the knees. There's a very, very clear moment on that video where you can see Marchand making contact with the knees. It was not the upper thigh as he claimed. And the argument is that what happened earlier in the play by no means should have made Marchand believe that he was being threatened because Salo came up and gave him a legit check. There was no reason to believe he wouldn't do the same on this next play. I thought Shanahan's video did a hell of a job justifying the suspension, if not the 5 games.
If it was... See, I was impressed with the video as well. I still don't think it should have been a suspension. I think it was just an imperfect hit.
Okay, we agree.
But when he said predatory hit, see, I have a hard time with that term because I believe, Greg, in professional hockey, aren't all hits predatory?
No, they're not.
What are you trying to do with a body check?
Here's the distinction I'll draw, and I think that Shanahan should have done this in the video, but he didn't. The video of Marchand throwing a hip check that almost got a little bit too low against Sedin in the playoffs last year in the Stanley Cup final when he flipped him. Sedin, although not exactly the most threatening of players, was definitely trying to run him on the end boards. So Marchand goes low, flips him as almost an act of self-defense. Mike Richards, in that play with Pat Coletta last year, when Coletta's trying to run Richards, he throws an elbow up. He takes out Coletta. That's an act of self-defense.
Ryan Smith and Chris Kunitz this year, same thing.
I got to go back and watch the video.
No, it was identical to Coletta Richards. I'm just reinforcing your point.
Okay. Yeah, so I do think that there are plays, illegal acts of self-defense versus predatory hits. This thing by Marchand was an attempt to hit Salo. It was not out of fear that he was going to get run over by Sammy Salo. I don't care what Marchand says. Last night he reinforced all of this stuff about what he thought the hit was. This is what he said on his ESPN blog. It technically wasn't clipping. Clipping is when you hit someone at the knees, and I did not hit him at the knees. Anyone who has seen the video will see that I hit him in the upper thigh under the buttocks. Really? They can call it clipping, but they obviously don't know.
Salo did turn.
They obviously don't know the rules of hockey. I felt like I was trying to protect myself and get low, and he went over me. It was very unfortunate that he was injured on the play. I think there's room in hockey for protecting yourself, but not from pedestrian checks along the boards by Sammy Salo. I just don't buy that the protection angle from Marchand that he's trying to sell.
Yeah, if this was Kevin Bieksa storming in, you got a better
exactly.
point.
Exactly. Yeah.
If this Albert's coming in, yeah, you probably got a better point. But this is Sammy Salo. Sammy Salo doesn't want to hit you because Sammy Salo is sick of being frickin' injured. Right? Sammy Salo is the Finnish McInnes. That's what he wants to do. He wants to shoot the puck. He doesn't want to cream anyone. He doesn't want to kill anyone. Even in one of the most emotionally charged games of the year, Sammy Salo just wants to shoot the puck. That's where he has fun. Right? That's his thing. Finish McInnes. That's all I think about when I think of Sammy Salah. He does not want to kill you. Having said that, do I think it's a five gamer? No, I don't. I think a lot of this is, and listen, he's made his own bed. They don't like Brad Marchand. I understand why, but I just really think at the end of the day, they don't like Brad Marchand. They're done with his little quote unquote act, if you will.
And again, it fits within the larger context of his mandate, Shanahan, which is to get rid of the rats. And, you know, Marchand's not a rat as identified as Brian Burke because Marchand fights when asked to.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a dirty player. He's a dirty player. And he's a dirty player. Carcillo's a dirty player. These guys that are constantly towing the line, playing on the edge, as they call it, and then taking liberties with guys, it's part of Shanahan's mandate to let the message be heard. And so Marchand said today that he heard the message, and we'll see how that whole thing works out. But last night on his ESPN blog, there's no question he was very defiant about it. So there you go. Marchand, five games. Reader mail,
How about Brad Marchand in response to Kevin Bieksa saying, well, that's how they play. You know, they're stupid. I'm paraphrasing here. Brad Marchand today firing back with stupid enough to win the Stanley Cup, I suppose. That's why I was waiting. Weren't you waiting for that? Like the minute that game ended on Saturday, someone from the Boston Bruins to pipe up about beating them for the Stanley. No one said it. Isn't it so freaking obvious?
Mm-hmm.
All you got to do is say, Boston won, Vancouver. No, we're talking about cups.
Yeah.
And this is the first time we heard it was this morning.
Scoreboard, as they say.
Mm.
The question of the day, which we never actually uttered on the air, but sent out via Twitter and other social media before the show, was we're terrible with that sometimes. About the All-Star game. What do you think about the All-Star game? How do you view the All-Star game? How do you approach it? Is it a pain in the ass? Do you not kind of dig it? Getting a lot of different stuff here. Jordan Clark writes in, watching a bunch of All-Stars sort of dog it for three periods doesn't seem to carry the appeal that it once did. The game needs some sort of hook to make it relevant again. Why not follow the lead of success of the Winter Classic in 24/7, make it an outdoor game and more of a shinny feel to it, mic up all the players, and then air a behind-the-scenes at the All-Star Game special a week later? I'd watch it.
What do you think of that?
It's pretty elaborate for an mm-hmm. exhibition game. but no, it's not a bad idea, because I like the idea of trying to make it more interactive and more behind-the-scenes. I mean, it is sort of like these actors come on stage for their draft, they disappear. They come on stage for the skills, they disappear. In the All-Star game, they're out there. There's probably a way to make the All-Star game more accessible with like cameras on the ice and that kind of thing than they do now, being that it's an exhibition game.
Have everybody mic'd up. I like that one. You turn it into a feature a week later. I don't mind that. Just to hear, because that is the loosest game you'll hear, and the chirps are funny and the beaking is funny, and It's just a fun event. Like, it doesn't have the like Adam Burrish isn't out there, so it's not gonna be nasty chirps, right? Sean Avery's not out there, Brad Marchand's not out there, Steve Ott's not out there, but it's just a fun little hockey game, right? It's like a day off hockey while you're playing hockey. Like, that's why I think that I just treat it like the best. Who, I mean, everyone listening here is going to at some point this year play at least one game of shinny. Right? I think we're all on the same page. Everyone's going to play one game of shinny. Well, folks, that game, the All-Star game, is the best game of shinny anywhere in the world that you will see. Just treat it that way and just enjoy yourself.
This is from Tim DeBrien. As a lifelong Devils fan and season ticket holder, I see plenty of unwatchable games a year, so it's fun to see guys try fun and exciting plays and score seemingly at will. The new format was great last year. I liked the idea that was thrown up by someone where the last players to be selected should be those voted in by the fans. That way, we don't piss off His Eminence Brian Burke.
Tyler Coveney says, definitely enjoy the skills competition more than the game itself. Oh, there have been some memorable moments come from it. Chris La Liberté. Oh, there was a kid in the Quebec League. The Flyers pick, last name La Liberté. Oh, they still have it. I stopped caring 10 years ago. Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Couple more here. Kevin Freeman. My feeling on the All-Star game events are this. Personally, the game kind of blows because of the lack of competition. I think the NHL should go back to East versus West, and like baseball, the winning team gets home ice advantage in the cup final. Disagree with that. I do not like that idea at all. I do not like the idea of an exhibition game having that kind of pull. Danny Heatley, Speedwagon, always been a geek for the skills competition, and I am going to Ottawa this January, but I'm on the fence whether to attend this event or not. As someone who has attended, can you lend any insight? I think it's a ton of fun. Personally, I think the skills probably translates better on television, where it, as in person, I imagine it being a lot of downtime and hard to see and understand everything that's going on. That's a great point. Skills competition in the arena is a bit disjointed. No more disjointed than an NFL game is in the stadium, but it is disjointed. The All-Star game itself might actually be just a shade better, but you do get those wonderful moments of like Shea Weber or Zdeno Chara popping a huge number on a shot, and and you get that wonderful moment. Mike Vell writes in, I think the All-Star game, I'm sorry, I think the All-Star game smells and is stupid. It's just full of guys half-assing it out there and hardly trying. No one hits, no one blocks shots, certainly no one fights, and goalies never do anything cool like sliding across the crease with the pad stacked. It's basically guys playing pickup hockey, trying not to get injured.
You know, the origins of the All-Star game was...
That was Mike Volucci, by the way.
Mike's awesome. The origin of the All-Star game comes out of a very ugly incident in the history of the NHL where Ace Bailey Eddie Shore went berserk on Ace Bailey after King Clancy had hit Eddie Shore. Shore thought it was Ace Bailey, not King Clancy, and the stick swinging melee ended Ace Bailey's career. And the All-Star game was a fundraiser to raise money for the Bailey family, because Ace couldn't provide for it anymore. Do you think that in that spirit, I know I'm a big history guy and I try to keep, you know, playing snakes and ladders and going back to history and trying to find, you know, associations from then to now, but do you think there should be like a really big, like an enormous charity component to the All-Star game every year? Because yes, it's great for fans, it's outstanding for sponsors. Do you think there should be something more done with charity, considering that's why this thing was invented in the first place?
It's not a bad thought. It really isn't a bad thought. You know, but then you start to get into the politics of what charity, and, you know, then you'll have Tyler Dello investigating the charity and finding out something really embarrassing about it at some point.
the Gary Bettman Benevolent Fund. Or, you know, how about this? Yeah. It is the charity of the host team's choosing.
That's not a bad idea at all. A local charity.
Yeah.
That's good.
And so there is a reward for some charity in the city that gets awarded the All-Star game. And that charity becomes part of the All-Star festivities.
Like it. A couple real quick ones, and we've gone over on this one here.
Oh man, look at that.
Jonathan Dunphy wrote in that Lemaire did the same thing with Kobolchuk with regard to your Gabrick point from before. Zen goalie, Bergeron for Selke. I completely agree. Patrice Bergeron deserves to be in the final three for the Selke. I think Jonathan Toews, based on the face-off percentage, based on a number of different factors, should be right there as well. Maybe probably in first. Let's see here. There's a bunch of other stuff. We're out of time. We really got to move on. We've gone over time here. It's embarrassing, really, how long we've gone, sir.
Yeah, and it's just us blathering, too.
I know. All right. Well, I'm Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Do we have anything else? Hang on, I'm just going to look at my... Oh, by the way, you mentioned Tyler Dello.
Yeah.
I don't know if he came up with this, but today on Twitter, he came up with the best name for the Boston Bruins.
What's that?
The Brutang Clan. Tell me that's nothing, not on it. Because like,
they're nothing to F with.
No, man. The Brutang Clan? That's strong. What else? I want to talk about players hiding concussions. Can we do that tomorrow?
Tomorrow we could do that. Also, a couple of injury notes. Jordan Eberle out at least 2 to 3 weeks. Pierre-Marc Bouchard, this is depressing. Bouchard out with concussion symptoms with a couple of different hits.
Yeah, and the Bogosian one being the first one against the Winnipeg Jets. And that was my sort of point out of all this, hiding concussions and playing while you may or may not be hurt. And he played 2 games after that Zach Bogosian hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and like players will do, and we saw Colby Armstrong try to hide a concussion from the Maple Leafs. Like, this to me underscores one thing, and I'll keep saying this forever and forever as we head into another CBA negotiation. If you don't want players to hide injuries and come back from early from things as significant as concussions, please don't have the fight over guaranteed contracts. You take away guaranteed contracts, you have a lot of injured hockey players, like damaged and destroyed hockey players playing your game.
I think we've just taken off the first little peel of the onion as far as how many layers of negotiation have to occur in the next CBA with this realignment stuff. We got no idea how deep this rabbit hole goes. Yeah.
Another little bit of news. Gilbert Brulé, you are now the new Patrick O'Sullivan. Member of the Phoenix Coyotes.
And I will read
from Edmonton.
I will recycle a Twitter joke. Maybe Bono can give him a ride to the Joshua Tree, being in the Southwest. Wouldn't that be exciting? That's the show for today, folks. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And congratulations to Mastro72. If you've been listening to the show as long as we've been doing the show today, Mastro72 might be the only person I've seen to get the name of the drunk goalie correct.
Uh-oh. Hang on. Let me just go up my Twitter line here.
Let's check timelines, people. Well, thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more fun and merriment.
Drunk goalies. Merrick, never happened. I don't know what
Merrick Baby Watch continues.
Yeah, I'm a game time decision every day, dude. Could be having another kid. Could happen tonight. I might miss my assignment doing the Calgary Flames New Jersey Devils game tonight. I don't know. I may miss the podcast tomorrow. I may be here all week. We may be here for another couple of weeks. We don't know. But at some point, I won't be here, and I'll be having
I eagerly look forward to you doing the show while breastfeeding. That will be a hell of a time.
Should we do the show while I'm having my vasectomy is the bigger question. Because that's next on the agenda. I got to call next week to make the booking. Do I do a podcast while I'm getting the snip? Because can I tell a quick story? I know we're late.
No, we're out of time.
It's a hockey vasectomy story, dude. You don't have,
all right,
how many
all
hockey
right.
vasectomy stories do you
all
have?
All right, keep the music going. We must hear the hockey vasectomy story.
Okay, so I'm doing Hockey Night in Canada Radio, right? For CBC. And this one, PJ Stock was the first appearance that PJ Stock had on the show. We made the booking a week in advance, and PJ comes on, and he's on late. PJ was always late. So he comes on late, and he's driving in his car back to Montreal, and all we keep hearing in the back is, as he's talking. And so whatever, we cut the interview short, it's like 10 minutes, and I call PJ when I get home, and I'm like, Peach, what the hell was that? He goes, dude, I made the booking, I totally forgot, I had a doctor's appointment, and I didn't want to break the interview, I didn't want to screw you guys over, but I had a vasectomy, and I was driving home, and I had a bag of frozen peas on my junk, and I didn't want to blow you guys off, because again, you guys needed a guest for 4:30. God, that's what, hey, say whatever you want about PJ Stock, if you love him or you don't love him, I love PJ Stock, and for that reason alone, you should love PJ Stock too.
Frozen peas.
Yeah, bro.
Well,
so do I do a podcast when I'm getting the snip or not?
Totally.
All right.
From the frozen food section.
Yeah, bro.
Frozen peas. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. That was worth it. That was worth going over for. I'll get that.
Vasectomy story. It's all good. Have a good day, Greg Wishes.
Bye-bye. Yeah. You too, Merrick. Bye. Thank you.